presentation will be divided into two parts. The first will be about relational databases and big data. And the second part of the presentation will be about Progress, Oracle, and SQL Server, something that we know better, at least me. So my name is Dmitry Levin. I'm working with Progress for 20 years, a little more than that. And I worked with Oracle for about 11. With SQL Server, I don't work with a lot, here and there, basically. I did a couple certifications just for fun, because I like doing certifications. And they show completely the opposite, you know, the thing that I know the least, I have, you know, the most certifications. So it really doesn't matter. You know, the fact that Progress doesn't have one is very good. So let's start talking about the databases. Well, obviously the topmost database is Oracle. I guess nobody's surprised that. And the second, I would say, is SQL Server. However, recently MySQL also gaining market share, and by certain numbers it's even surpassed the SQL Server. There's nothing wrong with SQL Server, I personally like it. The only downside, as I can see it, is it runs only on Windows. And that is, you know, I don't like Windows pretty much, but that's fine. However, this thing is also works in advantage for Microsoft, because Microsoft database works very good with Microsoft operating systems, kind of like hand in hand. So when we, in Progress or in Oracle, we need to specify like shared memory parameters and other shared parameters that we provide for the database. We don't have to do it in SQL Server. They kind of negotiate between database and operating system. So that is useful. The fourth one is definitely PostgreSQL. That's open source and a lot of people are using it. And to make it like top five, I'll put DB2 here because IBM, you know, it's a powerful company. So that is kind of top five, if you ask me. Other than that, you can name any database here. I put just a couple to fill the slides. We can put Informix here and other databases. So this is kind of established market. And if you look at this 10 years ago, it wouldn't look much different than it looks now. The big data is kind of a new market. It started 5-7 years ago, I would say, when we can work with terabytes, you know, petabytes, even exabytes of data, which is humongous amount of information. And the top database is MongoDB. You probably heard about it at the opening session and probably somewhere else. And the word Mongo comes from the word humongous. It's actually an abbreviation of humongous. And if you've never heard about MongoDB, you definitely heard about Craigslist, you heard about eBay, you know, all these companies are using MongoDB. The second one that I would like to put is Cassandra. If you haven't heard Cassandra, you definitely know what is Facebook is, right? And the third, I put here HBase, because that is a part of Apache Foundation. There are many other NoSQL databases. The databases, the relational databases, are all kind of the same. And I will show you in the second part of the presentation. They all use SQL language, you can see that in the names. The big data databases are different. And there are four basic types of big SQL databases. The first is key value store. Basically, all of these types kind of store key value pairs in some kind of format. So the first is key value, and Oracle is definitely not the major player in big data, at least so far it is not. The second is a column store, and beside Cassandra and HBase, there is a Google Bigtable. Bigtable was kind of like the first database, it's kind of like of COBOL, the languages, but it's also kind of extinct right now, not really speaking. And I will talk the rest of the presentation about MongoDB, because I know that better than the rest of the databases that are on this list. I don't know anything about graphs, because that's the fourth type of databases. So when I think about big data, it reminds me ProUtil Log-I. Why do we do that in progress? Well, we do that if you want to load a lot of data very quickly, and we sacrifice durability. So if it crashes, it's gone. The big data, of course, doesn't lose a lot of data, but the loss of data is quite possible. It often happens all the time with the big data. So what do we have in big data? So obviously it's not relational databases, and instead of the row, we have documents. And if you remember one thing from my presentation, I would like to remember this one, that it doesn't have a schema. So there is no tables, no sequences, no, everything that you learned and looked in data dictionary doesn't apply. So if there's no schema, what do they have? As I said, the row is called a document, and the document is basically a JSON object. So it is a list of key value pairs. JSON, of course, has some laws for the documents. For example, this document is not valid because the key is repeated here twice. You can see the name, so that's not a valid document. As long as the document is valid, it's just good for the database. So the documents together make a collection. A collection is a kind of a table that we have in relational databases. So the collection may look like, for example, that one. It looks like a collection of some individuals because we have names here and last names and something like that. But the third one looks completely bogus because it doesn't belong to this collection. However, that is a valid document and it will be happily accepted in the collection. There's no validations that you can set on the collection, so that's a very good collection. Obviously, you can see that collection could have a chunk documents, and it is more responsibility on the programmer side to make sure that jump doesn't happen then in database administrator, because there's no schema. So we have a database, collections, documents, and each document basically has a fields, like in progress, which is key value pairs. Mongo database have indexes. There are other big data databases that don't have indexes, and I'll talk about that later. Every document has an ID field, which is kind of like primary key. As soon as you create the record, you create the document, the ID field is inserted. So we have, this is just a picture to represent, so we have collections of documents, like our tables with rows in our relational databases. So the first feature is the absence of schema. The second, also important feature, maybe it's the first feature, is a scaling. What do we do if our system does not perform very good? We basically buy a bigger server. We buy more CPU, we buy more memory, in other words, we are scaling up by spending some money. The big data databases are scaling outside of the box. So basically, instead of buying a bigger server, we buy additional servers. And there's a little elephant, which is called Hadoop, which helps, you know, scaling outside of the box. And when we scale, the first term that you may hear, or if you read literature about big data, you'll definitely hear it, which is called SHARP. So what is SHARP? Sharding is the same as partitioning. Well, the conference has a lot of presentation about partitioning, right? So partitioning is when a table is divided into chunks. Here I have two partitions of the same table. Sharding is the same thing, but the shards reside on the different servers. So in this picture, I have two servers, one database that's one database, one table, but divided into two shards. So that's a very important term. You hear it a lot, you know, if you read something about big data. With sharding, we can do disaster recovery built inside the database, something that we couldn't do with our database. We usually buy target server, set up an application, and do, you know, what we do. With sharding, we can do something like that. We can put two shards on A and B nodes, put two shards on B and C, and put the third shard like that. So if we lose any of these servers, our database will be perfectly running. For example, this, all three shards are available now.
Typically, in relational array requires the application to be aware of the shards, is that right?
Application should be aware, yes.
Yeah, so it has to know that B is down and we're correct to track.
Yes. So let's finish the slide that I started. Obviously, there is no normalization because there is no tables, there is no referential integrity. And the third important feature, there is no transactions. Well, that's, we used to have transactions in our databases, so we don't have a transactions here. And actually, for the big data, it's working fine. Like, if you lose a transaction, that would be obviously bad for your database because a transaction could cost $1 million, right? And even if the transaction is $10, you will have a happy customer or a happy account if the general ledger doesn't, you know, mean. So it is bad. Let's take an example of big data. Let's say cardiologists prescribe a device, you know, that monitors the heartbeat. And that device records the heartbeat every several times a second. So pretend that we lost 100 transactions, 200 of those transactions. The whole data goes to the big data. When the doctor comes in the office, he will see the performance of the heart for 24 hours. These 200 transactions that is lost will represent probably a minute or 2 minutes in the 24 hours picture. For the doctor, that doesn't mean much. So it's quite acceptable for the big data to lose considerable amount of data when it's loaded. There is no raw logs because there is no transactions, and there is no joins because there is no SQL, and every time we query a collection, we query just one collection. So now let's look at an example. That's much better to see an example, right? Here I create a document in the Mongo database. And the syntax is that simple. It's exactly similar to our example on the left. Well, the difference is that I have to have a customer in the schema here. On the right, I don't have customer anywhere. It's basically the collection will be created as soon as I execute this statement. And in the program, we misspell the customer somehow different, it will go to a different collection. So basically more responsibility on the program. How we do the for each? Well, that is a for each. We do basically find on the collection, and it will list all the documents that are in this collection, similar to our for each here. And this is an ID. Remember I said that as soon as I create a document, the ID will be automatically inserted in the document. That's that underscore ID. If you want to do find just one document, you do find one. And find one was exactly as our find first in progress. Okay, we found the records. How we do updates? Well, it's simple. We just do update the some document, and in this case, I replace it with a new document. There is a way to replace just one field, you know, update, not the whole document. We can drop the document if we specify which document we want to drop, or we can delete all the documents. In this case, I basically remove the whole collection because I don't specify any criteria, so the whole collection will be dropped. There's something that you can do with the big data that you couldn't do in relational databases is extend the document. Like, for example, I could not extend the record beyond the fields that are specified in the schema. Here, I basically take a document and set an age to, you know, to this document. And that will be heavily added to this document. So in about 2 minutes, we went through all CRUD operation, read, create, delete, you know, all of this. And if you want to try yourself, you can go to try MongoDB and just try it. Okay, so where it is used, I already mentioned the healthcare, right? The second thing is a retail. I'm sure all of you have this, you know, card that you slide when you shop something, right? And if you don't have this card, the store manager will happily slide his own card, right? And basically what it means is that your transaction is lost, right? It's not a big deal. So it's used in retail, big stores, healthcare, security. Everyone has a cell phone, right? So all this cell phone information goes into the big data and recorded. And if big guys want to know where you have been, it could be easily retrieved using your phone number, because your phone number is kind of a unique ID to your location. But if they want to get information about the users that, for example, been in this place at that particular time, it will be more difficult because there's no indexes in the big data. So very often what they do, they export the big data into a relational database like Oracle, like Progress. So they take the chunk of like all cell phones from, you know, Massachusetts for this particular day, export it to the database, built-in indexes on date and time, and then they could be fine basically what they need to. So relational databases help supplement big data. Social media, obviously Facebook, you know, and all of this using the big data, emergency management. Now, when I think about big data, it's like a monster vehicle like this. It's a very powerful vehicle, but also it's kind of inconvenient sometimes, because you will not go grocery shopping using this vehicle, right? You will use something more common, right? Same with the big data. Could you create ERP system on big data? Well, the answer is yes, you can, but you don't want to do that, because you can emulate transactions. Basically, you can do what Progress does for you in big data, but you don't want to do that. So for our day-to-day purposes, we'll probably use a car like this, which represent our relational databases. And there should be something in between, something that also convenient to use, but powerful, like vehicle on right. And that this picture represents standard 4x40. So there should be some databases, types of databases, which have a transactional, like relational database, but also could scale outside of the box. And those group of databases is called NewSQL. That is a completely new group of databases. You know, I wouldn't say which one is the top one. I don't think there is one at this moment, but I'll just name a couple ones that in this sector. And there are two different streams of them. One is called general purpose databases, and another is in-memory databases. I looked a couple presentations from MongoDB that looks like very good scale outside of the box, but I haven't tried to, so we'll see how it goes. And obviously the big companies in moving into this sector, Oracle has times 10 database. IBM tried to merge Informix with MongoDB. So basically tried to make Informix work on a cluster of computers. We'll see how it goes, but that's project. Enterprise database is a spin-off of PostgreSQL. I showed PostgreSQL in the previous slide. They tried to make Postgres also work on a cluster of computers, but that's still work in progress. And to finish the slide, we have Microsoft. Obviously, you know, Microsoft came out with SQL Server 2014 a month ago, and that is in-memory database. I think that is a new sector that will be very interesting for the future. That's basically all that I want to say about big data. If you have any questions, at this time. If we approve this time. If not, I'll proceed with the Oracle Pro's and SQL Server, which I know better than every data. So when we talk about databases other than Progress, the term that I would like to introduce is an instance. Instance is different from the database. Though in Progress world, we always say we start the database, we shut down the database, because it is always one-to-one relationship between the instance and the database. The database is the file that you can see on disk, the DB, the DI, the log file. That is the database, in my understanding. The instance is shared memory and the background processes. And the other databases, like Oracle, like SQL, could have many instances of one database. Or they could have one instance which would share a couple of databases. That's why we need to know the difference between the two. So the typical Progress database and Oracle, and Progress will be always on the left side of my presentation, will have one instance, and the database basically will be running one instance for Oracle. For SQL, it will look completely different than it looks for Oracle and for Progress. We'll always have several databases running inside one instance. And since it is different, I will show you how it looks on the picture a little bit later. Database could have many schemas in Oracle. Almost always Oracle will have several schemas. The SQL database most commonly will have just one schema, because you can just create another database for another application, though it could have several schemas. And this is a SQL instance. This instance will have system databases. You can see four system databases, and it will have a user databases. User databases is which you and me will create. So those are a couple databases that I created. Okay, so we're coming to version 11. Now we have multi-tenancies. So inside one database, we'll have several tenants. Oracle also implemented multi-tenancy in version 12c, though Oracle multi-tenancy is different from Progress multi-tenancy. And if you notice, when Progress and Oracle name things the same, it's usually a different thing. It's not the same. So the pluggable database is a new feature of Oracle. I wouldn't call it a database, and I will explain why I wouldn't. It's kind of the union of areas, you can think about, like several areas that you can take out of container and plug into another container. Why it is useful? Because upgrade of the database, in Progress it's simple, it's 5 minutes, right? We can upgrade our database. Upgrading Oracle is a big thing. You know, I several times went through upgrades and it never happens faster than 1 hour. And to have Oracle database down for 1 hour, it's a big thing. That's why they implemented this pluggable database. So when you upgrade, you basically create a second container in a new version, unplug the database, and quickly plug it into the new container. So that's the idea. And also you may notice that now Oracle configuration looks very much like SQL Server, starting with 12c. So the backup, now we can do the backup of the smallest unit. So in Progress, I believe we can do the backup of the tenant, right? And pluggable database in case of Oracle, and the database in SQL Server. Physical structure. The first most important file you can say in Progress is a DB file, right? This is a kind of binary representation of a structure file. So we can easily create a prostruct list, creating the structure file using DB file. And if we can recreate DB file using pro-util build DB. Okay. So basically, this is just binary representation of this one. The control file in Oracle is very similar to the DB file. It has all information about where the other data files exist. but it is little more than that. We can create a backup of a control file to trace, and that basically creates a text file which you can read. And this file looks kind of similar to our ST file. We can recreate control file back from this structure file, but it will miss a very important piece. It will have an old system change number. What is a system change number in Oracle? It's the same thing as log change in SQL Server, and the same as last transaction number in progress. If you went to the presentation of Gus and Dan that they did in the morning, they referenced this number, you know, talk about it a lot. For the databases, we don't use it a lot, but it's very important for internal use of the database. And you can see this number in Pramon. If you look at option 7 Pramon, that's last transaction number. Where we can use this in progress, we can roll forward after images, right, to a certain point in time or to the last transaction number. That's probably the only place where you could find this last transaction number is used. Same thing you can do in Oracle. You can recover database to a certain moment in time or to a certain SCM. So you can see similar thing. Same thing in SQL Server. You can basically restore the log of SQL Server to a certain timestamp or to a certain LSM. So three databases, same behavior. So this system change number goes into control file. For SQL, the structure of the database goes into the master file, in this master database server. Now, the data for our database goes into the areas, like in D files, like this one, right? And in SQL, it goes into the system table spaces, basically, starting with system. Both Progress and Oracle doesn't recommend to store user data into the system area or system table space, right? These two. But SQL Server doesn't recommend that. You can happily store all your data in primary data file. The reason for that, I believe, is because SQL has system databases, something that Oracle and Progress doesn't have. So the typical SQL database will look something like that. It will have one MDF file and one LDF file. That is a simple version. And you can think about this as a version 8 of Progress. If you remember, it has DB file and BI file, right? Well, that's the same thing. That is your DB file and that is your BI file. The production database will probably have a couple of these NDF files, which is like our areas. So that is our production database in the company. So we have one MDF file and a couple secondary data files for SQL. And those correspond to our area files or table spaces in Oracle. Now let's look at how we protect our database. We protect the database using before image and after image in Progress. And this is in Oracle, this is for SQL Server. So it will look like that. Progress has before image and after image. And Oracle will have a do log and undo table space. There is no one-to-one relationship between those, but together they work kind of like after image and before image works together. So we have undo transactions, you can undo using table space, and you protect the database using the redo logs. For SQL, you will have separate logs for each database. That's why I mentioned that pluggable database for Oracle is not really the database, because all pluggable databases using the same redo logs. That's why I consider it a kind of group of table spaces instead of the full database. For Microsoft, that's a full database because you have transaction log for each of the database, and you can set a recovery
for each database separately. Yep. Yes, all the pluggable databases will share the same view login and view table space. That's right.
Yeah, like you said, I think you said earlier that you probably do this in different versions, is that right?
Not inside the same container.
One
container is basically what I would think is one database. You know, pluggable database is a bad name in my understanding. It's called pluggable table spaces or something like that. So the container in Oracle will be always to one version. You know, if you upgrade, we create a new container with a different version of Oracle. We can set up backup, you can backup a container database. So we can set everything up and then we unplug the database from one version, plug it into another. No, you unplug, basically you specify that these files individual, so basically will be now, so basically you know the structure of Oracle database, you say these files are not anymore the structure of this database, now they are part of the structure of that database.
Does that just transportable table space?
Similar. Transportable table spaces have been in Oracle for years. Yeah, this is kind of new spin on transportable table spaces. Right. Okay, so how we protect our database? In progress, we either run with after images or without after images. And everyone should run production database with after images, right? I think it was mentioned 100 times in this conference already. Okay, this is one more time. I just want to point that the same thing applies to Oracle and same thing applies to SQL Server. Oracle should be always running archive log if it is production and SQL Server full recovery model. And Oracle is a kind of forcing you also into this scenario because if you are running it no archive log, you wouldn't even make online backup of the database. And you have to make a backup of your database, otherwise you don't care about it. So it is kind of another stimulus to use, you know, archive log. For development, your mileage may vary, but I always run without after images, and for Oracle, I run no archive log. Also, the difference between progress is that after images is kind of part of the structure. It's not part of the database. If you take a backup of the database and restore it, then whether the original was with after images or without, it doesn't matter because the new database will be without after images, right? You have to set up on the structure level. For Oracle, this is part of the database. If you copy Oracle database, it will be running with archive log, which sometimes you don't want. So different intent, which quite a couple of times. Now, the SQL Server has also the third model. This is called bulk load. This is only special case for loading data. You don't run it 24/7. So that is kind of special case. SQL Server, this is or that one you run 24/7. Now let's finish this slide. So we talked about before images, copy of after images in Oracle's called just archive log, but it's the same thing, basically. Now the log file in Oracle is called alert log because it is starting with the name alert. And it is very similar to progress log, if you look at this. The only difference that you immediately will see that Oracle will not have disconnect and connect. You know, you see progress log, always disconnect, connect, connect, disconnect. This part is not part of this Oracle log. But everything that pertains to the database, like startup parameters, you know, switching the after images, that all part of the log, and critical errors, of course. If the user receives critical error, it will be in the log. Just a little bit. And also, this log is stored in Oracle install directory. It's not going to the same way a database is. It's going to Oracle install directory. For SQL Server, it's called error log, and it is one per instance.
So it's not one per database. When you shut down SQL Server instance, what Microsoft will do for you, it will rotate the log. It will create a brand new one and rename the old one with error log.1. It's something that you can do with Progress with Prolog command, right? But you have to do it manually. Microsoft does it for you. Parameters. The parameter file is called init.ora, and that's the name of the database. And it is also in the install directory of Oracle. It is convenient, in my opinion, because if you come to the client and you have never seen the database and never talked to the client, you can go to certain directory in Oracle install, and you can see all these parameters in one place. So you know what databases they're running, you know all the parameters without even talking to the clients. And in Microsoft, that goes to the registry because it's Windows, they can put it in the registry. So that is a list of parameters files that you can see in OpenEdge, the manager. You can also query VST, underscore startup will show you some parameters, and I believe I talked to Rich Bandel, he said eventually it will show all the parameters, so basically Progress is working on this to have the ability to see all the parameters using 4GL. That is Oracle Enterprise Manager. It is abbreviated, by the way, the same OEM as Progress, and in fact it means the same. The parameters that are called dynamic here, those are changeable parameters. It is similar to Progress parameters, which you can change on the fly. Remember, util, increase to, you can use. That is the same thing. So some parameters are dynamic and some parameters are static. For static, meaning if you change parameter, you have to bounce the database in order to take it. But for the dynamic, you can change it right here. Like, I can change this parameter, like, right here, and click apply. SQL startup parameter will look like that, and as I said, they're in the registry. Now let's talk about logical structure. I believe you understand right now that area is called table space in Oracle, and in Microsoft it's called file group. So it's the same thing, just called differently. What types of objects we have? We have tables, we have indexes, and we have logs, right? Starting with 11.4, we'll have also new types of objects. We'll have partition table, an object, partition index, and probably partition log. And the same with Oracle. They're called segments, but basically the same as what we call objects. The object consists of clusters, and cluster consists of blocks, and this is how many blocks we can have in one cluster in Progress. And each block is from 1 to 8K, but usually we choose 8K blocks for our database. Oracle have different set of blocks, you can choose between 2 and 64K. And the Microsoft called block a page, so if you hear the word page in Microsoft, that's actually a block. And the size of the page is set in stone, 8K, there's no choosing. And same for the extent, Microsoft extent is always 8 pages. So that's all defined for you. Oracle, however, is system managed. It's basically that it chooses some small extent for you, and when you load the data, it makes each next extent progressively bigger. It's called system managed extents, Oracle. Background processes, those are the background processes of Progress. And these are corresponding background processes in Oracle. In old version 9 of Oracle, there were about 13 or 15 background processes, and it was all easy, and I remember all of them. But each next version of Oracle comes with twice more background processes. So coming from 9 to 12, right now there are like 100 of different types of background processes. I don't know even how many.
They're always running, or you have to turn
No. They are for specific purpose. Like if you restore the database, then those background processes will do the job for you. If you do the load, like final, there is another type of background process, and usually they have threads. So basically, it's like a master and a couple of slaves. And basically, for all operations, they have a background process. So with progress, that haven't changed a lot in a while. So we'll see. And SQL Server pulls the threads because it's Windows, so it's not a background process, threads. And lazy writer will correspond to our ADW. So that's how progress background processes look. I'm sure you've seen this many times. And that is how Oracle background processes will look, and the list will go on. Yeah. You can also view these background processes browsing VST. You know, this, everything that starts with $B in Oracle is virtual system tables, basically. And I use this to show you the, you know, the background processes that comes in my instance. And the same thing you can do with SQL Server, you know, dynamic management, you know, this is like Microsoft VSTs. And that showed me, see this lazy writer and all other background background threads and processes. The one thing that I would like to point out, that regardless of which database I choose, I will see exactly the same picture here. Because remember from the first slide, the background processes pertain for instances, not for the database. So that's why we have the same background processes running for all of those databases, including system ones.
It's not possible to run two instances on one SQL server.
Yes, if you have two installation, like you install SQL and then install.
To install.
Yeah, to install, then yes. Yes, otherwise you have one instance.
But nobody does that.
You can, not often. Usually you have one instance. And besides, I told you they're very good communicating between instances, and so they share, give it as much memory as it can.
Okay.
The operating system gives
you. You can have different versions of, right? So.
Different versions of SQL, yes, you can. Yeah, absolutely.
Some
yes, yes, you can. So, meta schema and VST. Some people are confusing it because in progress world, VST and metaschema both start with underscore. But there is a difference. Metaschema is a real table, like our tables and indexes and sequences. Those are preserved. If you shut down the progress database, metaschema is all preserved. But the virtual system tables will be all gone. They'll be all zeros when you bring the database up. And also, you can look for the file number. You know, the metaschema tables, you know, these have small negative numbers, and the VST has a big negative numbers. So the Oracle VST is, you know, the, sorry, metaschema. Oracle metaschema, always you can view the DBA views, and for SQL you use SIS views. And they pretty much mesh one to one, so you just need to pick the one that you need. Now, VSTs, in Oracle, it's called dynamic performance views, or some people call it $B because they start with $B. For SQL, they're called dynamic management views. That's the same thing. Now, this is a couple of VSTs that I put on the screen. And this is $B background is another one which is not on this slide. So that is for SQL. Oops, I've kind of slipped. Supply databases, you know, sports database, for Microsoft that will be AdventureWorks database, which you will do all the tests with, and for Oracle that will be HR schema. It's not the database, it's a schema. Because when we want to test something with progress, I usually create a copy of sports database, do the test, and then delete the database. It's quick, right? Same thing for Microsoft, I can create the database in no time. For Oracle, creating the database, not the pluggable database, I mean the database, it's a work. It could take half an hour, it could take 1 hour, depending on which options you choose, but this is a big step. So instead of creating a database, I just create a schema like a chart, for example. Then I do my test and I draw the schema. It's kind of different approach. Partitioning. There are a lot of talks about partitioning in other sections. I just want to mention that it's the same partitioning in Oracle and SQL Server with addition of hash. But hash partitioning, we don't need. Rich Bundle talked about this already. Nobody is using it basically. And sub-partitioning, which we describe a lot, is called composite partitioning in Oracle. So just different name, but same thing. And composite partitioning in Progress is completely different. It's basically like a union of two partitions together instead of sub-partitioning. So the names are different, but the same. Now, protecting the database, that's the thing that I like to talk because that's what we pay money for, protecting the data, right? So everyone should have a backup and replication and clustering, if you can, and flash buffers, on the forward. So what is the backup? The backup in Progress is pretty simple. You just specify the database and the file name. Done, right? Same thing with SQL. You just specify the database, file name, done. Oracle backup is very complicated. I wouldn't have time to talk about it even if I have another 1 hour. So I just keep it all together. I just say that Oracle and Progress and SQL can do online backup and offline. And most of the time you will do online backup because you couldn't bring database down. Most of it is production database. There is incremental backup, which is called differential in Oracle and in SQL Server, but it is the same thing as our incremental backup. No difference. The thing that we don't have yet in Progress is a partial backup, which we have Oracle and SQL. That means that we can backup several table spaces or several file groups and restore. And occasionally that is helpful. And also SQL Server has a log backup, which is specific for the SQL Server. What else I can do with Oracle and SQL, I can compress the backup. So that is my production database. This is actually my Progress production database. And that's my Oracle production. I'm not doing this backup. I always do compressed backup. And what is surprising, that compressed backup runs approximately the same time as uncompressed backup. Even in some cases, you can have compressed backup running faster than uncompressed. If you have a kind of poor file system, because you have 5 times less writes, you're winning on the writes. You're losing on compression and on the CPU, but you're winning on the writes. So it could be slower, but it also could be faster. And SQL Server also has a compressed backup. I have never used it, though. Now, replication. What type of replication we are using? I believe everyone is using asynchronous replication, right? Nobody uses synchronous. Right, same in Oracle, they always use asynchronous because what happens if we lose the network? Then the production database could function, right? Because it has to have connection. In 12c, Oracle came up with a new idea which is called FarSync database. That's brand new. Thing. What they do is they put a FarSync database on the server by itself next to the source database. So basically the same data center. The network between these is supposed to be 100% reliable. And the replication between the source and the FarSync is synchronous. The replication through the network, wide network, is asynchronous. So if we lose connection right here, then the source database will be happily working because all the changes will be accumulated right here until the network will come back up. If you lose the source database, on the other hand, all the transaction will be on the FarSync because that's synchronous replication. So this is kind of win-win situation. Okay, next thing is about
Can I pass a slide?
Back
So with the Farsync database, we kept on the same server as the
source database?
Or no, no. Basically, get it's the different. Be the next
yes. Thing. We have three servers here. One server, two server, third server.
And just be able to be a cable directly between
the source database. Yes, okay. Cable directly. In the same data center, cable directly. So if this box goes down, that is in separate box.
Still synchronized. All right, thank you.
Sure. This configuration I have back in the office in Pennsylvania. I have IBM HACNT cluster, and I have two nodes, and one of the nodes is running my Progress database, and the second node is kind of idle. And for Oracle, we can have this picture, which represents Oracle Real Application Cluster. We will have two nodes running at the same time. Question.
Are you using ProCluster or you don't bother? You just
no, I don't bother. I can use ProCluster, I just don't bother.
But no value.
Yeah, yeah, it's the same thing with ProCluster or maybe other stuff. I will still have a downtime, right? Whether I use ProCluster or I don't use ProCluster.
I'm asking because I'm looking for someone to give me the value of ProCluster. I'm looking for someone to convince me to use ProCluster.
Dan's the only person I've ever heard of that's helped somebody with ProCluster.
Is it because the customer absolutely wanted it?
Well, I don't know. It was just in a presentation he gave one time. He said he gave like three reasons or three things you really have to be careful setting up for ProCluster because he had a client who used it and some of the things that he used it. That's the only time I've ever heard.
Yeah, we had a couple scenarios where we crashed, and I will tell you, like, that was perfectly fine. So the advantages of this scenario is not only for disaster recovery, but also for load balancing. Because here we have one server working, here we have two, we can load balance the users. We can put some of the users, like we could put accounting users right here, and we can put operations user right here. So the record that pertain for accounting will go here in this buffer cache. And the records that pertain for the other will go to another buffer cache. So it's kind of alternative buffer cache, but on two different servers. So there are other advantages other than disaster recovery. But let's pretend we lost the server. So here we'll have, you know, server goes down, it's crashed. Here we'll have users working with the server number two. If server number two could handle the load, because now it will handle basically twice more load than before. So after like a couple minutes, we'll mount the, you know, this disk file system, and our users will be happily working.
In the Oracle rack configuration, yes. The users who were connected to server one, they crashed, though, right?
It's basically the request that the request, if it was not fulfilled, then yes, but the next request that is coming, it will be redirected through listener to the server number two.
So the user doesn't feel it, except maybe on the exact query?
Yeah, maybe, but most likely it's not, especially if it is observer, you know, then it's not, because the other set of observer will be worth it. Yeah, but for our business, what we have with Progress works for us. We can afford 5 or 10 minutes downtime. Not an hour, but 5 minutes works for us. So we are happy with what we have. Flashback. Flashback is only pertaining to Oracle. And this is basically when we move database backwards. It's basically the opposite of roll forward after images. Remember the slide when we roll forward after images, that's when we move the database back in time. So here I can move the database back by 1 day or to the certain SCM, right? I can, instead of moving the database backwards, I can just query. I can see what was in my table 30 minutes ago. So this is just a query. It shows me how it looked like 30 minutes ago. For SQL, instead of flashback, there is a snapshot. And that is a syntax to create a snapshot of the database. Where you can return. So you can't return to arbitrary point of time, but you return to the snapshot. Which is a kind of online backup. You can create online backup, but that is a faster way. So you don't have to restore. connecting to the database, almost finished, 25 minutes. In progress, we can two ways to connect, either through the shared memory or through client server. The Oracle connection is going through the listener, and that is similar to client server connection. And when we connect to SQL database, there are two ways, because it's Windows. You can either use login and password, or you can use Windows credential. And I'll quickly show you how it looks like. This is the same database that I connect using my login and the password. Or I can do just using my Windows authentication. I click connect, and I'm done. This is how Progress connection happens. Basically, you specify the host and the service name, or you can specify another service name, and then you connect to a different database. For Oracle, you will have a listener. A listener is a kind of process that handles connections, kind of login broker in progress. And by default, it runs on port 1521. So when I connect, I specify the host name, the port number, and the system identifier. And the listener connects me to the database. If I specify different identifier, then it will connect me to the different database.
Wait, in the firewall, you only have to open 1521?
Yes, right, for the listener. Because after that, the listener decides which database you connect to.
But it doesn't disconnect you from, like, progress and tell you go connect on another port.
I believe it does. Basically, I believe it does. Because if you shut down the listener, all the users that are already connected to the database will be happy to work. You need the listener only for connection. So maybe we need to open the port.
I think they're all connected. No, I don't know. Okay.
Yeah. So listener is behaving very similar to
login. Do you have the import max port then for Oracle?
Not that I know.
Because you have to go be going to 1521.
Probably. 1521 you can change on this default one. Okay, shutdown. There are more shutdown options in Oracle than we have in progress, but the only one that I'm using is this one, which corresponds to our unconditional shutdown, or in the worst case scenario, shutdown abort. So these two I never use. Progress is always on the left side. Always. Yes, basically this is a standard shutdown. We cleanly shut down the database, and this one obviously is, it's like unplugged from the, same with Oracle. But this normal shutdown, what it does, basically waits until all the users allow by themselves.
Progress has to the VM events.
The what?
Shutdown minus VM is wait.
VM?
Yeah.
Wait for progress has this
option? Shutdown minus VM, yeah.
Anyone using it?
No,
I think you know that progress has that, but yeah, those are absolutely, progress that shut down. And that's probably my final slide. The startup for Oracle is also different than it's for progress. Progress has only two stages. It's either open database or closed. For Oracle, it will be first closed. Then when you read the parameter files and start the shared memory, it becomes a no-mount mode. And it's different in Oracle, that when you restore the database in progress, you have a closed database and you just repro-rest, right? For Oracle to restore the database, you have to run it. You have to have a shared memory, background processes, and that's the mode you restore. You never could restore the database when it's closed. That's slightly different. So let's say we have an Oracle database. So next step is mount mode. It reads the control file. Remember I mentioned the control file at the beginning and finds where all the pieces are connected, but not opens yet. And then finally it opens. At this point it checks that everything is valid, goes through crash recovery. It's the same procedure, but divided into three different steps, basically. And I believe that is it. Do you have any questions? Go ahead.
Is a mount mode kind of like a multi-user but only the DBA can log in?
Mount mode, Well, the amount of the database, there's no database.
Okay.
Basically, you can bring the database into the mount mode without having the database. All you have to know have is the parameter file.
Okay.
And when you restore the database, you probably don't have it. Right. So the users could not log in because the users could only log in to the open. That's it.
Okay.
If the database is not open, user is not allowed to log in.
But the DBA can do maintenance.
Yeah, the DBA could connect and he could log in from different screens. Like for example, if the database doesn't shut down, I can connect to the database on another session and bring it down forcefully. You know, so DBA is always can connect, even in a restricted mode. If you have not any questions, but it will be later, you can send email to my address. You can look my Progress in Oracle website, which has some information related to Progress in Oracle. If you have any suggestions, please let me know too, because I'd like to learn if anything was not good. I'd like to hear it too.